Working Cows Podcast, episode 82.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows podcast, brought to you by the Global Ag Network. So we're going to rework the schedule a bit. I got a few of the episodes that I've recorded that are with some people who've got time-sensitive events happening connected to their businesses. And so I'm going to try and get those out over the next few days. I'm going to try and release a few episodes. I'm not going to call them bonus episodes necessarily because they are very much connected to the ethos of the Working Cows podcast. And so we're going to just try and release some regular episodes. Not going to wait till Mondays to be releasing them, but we're going to release them, and I encourage you to consume them as quickly as possible so that you can get in on some of the information that we're sharing that is a little bit time sensitive. Now, the overall topics that we're talking about will be evergreen topics, as we always try to do things that you could listen to at any time and you're not missing out on anything. It's not like a daily news broadcast or anything like that. But we are going to be making you aware of, through those episodes, some time-sensitive issues. And one of those time-sensitive issues that I'm going to talk about with my guest today, Rob Jennings, is a webinar that I want to invite you to. This will be a first in the history of the Working Cows podcast. So we're going to have a webinar with Rob Jennings, with Beef Chain, coming up on April 16th at 8 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time. So 8 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time, we're going to have a webinar there. And if you want to see that, or if you want to click on a link to that webinar, of course, show notes page for today, workingcows.net/82. The show notes page for today is workingcows.net/82. Go there, click the link. It'll be at the very top of the show notes page, right after the little brief introduction that I put on every episode. There'll be a link to a Google Calendar event for the webinar that's coming up on Tuesday, April 16th at 8 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time. So go ahead and RSVP for that. And within that Google Calendar event, there will be a link to the Zoom event that will be scheduled. And this will be a live interactive webinar where you can at least type in questions, if not ask questions over the phone or via the webcam and microphone on your computer. So really exciting. As I said, first in the history of the Working Cows podcast, opportunity to do something like this. Now, on to our episode today. We're talking to, as I said, Rob Jennings of Beef Chain. And Rob is one of the developers of this application, or one of the developers of this technology. And what this is, and before you get nervous as I say the word traceability, what this is a opportunity for the free market and for beef producers, grazers, to voluntarily enter into a traceability contract with their next in line chain of custody consumer, whether that's a packer, feeder, or pasture to plate type thing with direct marketing, whatever it is. There's some really amazing technology built into Beef Chain, and it's traceability, but it's not government mandated. It's not centrally planned. It is a voluntary association of people getting into traceability. So I'm really excited to talk about this technology, as maybe you can tell, making the case for it a little bit ahead of time, but I'm excited to welcome Rob to the Working Cows podcast. Rob, thank you for joining me today.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Clay. Very much appreciate you inviting us, and glad to be here.
So as you look at Beef Chain specifically, what advantages do you think it presents to the producer of commodity beef?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, we like to differentiate commodity beef a little bit from the beef that's raised in Wyoming, South Dakota, and Idaho and in the mountain states, but completely understand. And part of what we want to do is, and this relates to specifically to Wyoming, but I think this is an issue with cow-calf producers across the country, is how do we tell the story of the handling of the animals, the way they're raised, the programs they're in, and how do we keep that from getting lost in the commodity beef feed yard, if you will, or the commodity beef supply chain? How do we differentiate American beef from Mexican or South American beef? And, you know, what we like to do, and the reason that we started doing this around blockchain, was to really get beyond just telling the data stories and get into validating the data. And that was really important to us, is that we validate the data and make sure that that story is real. So we're not, you know, utilizing false claims, or we're not utilizing nebulous claims that so often circle around livestock and, you know, all with all these different sort of organic and all natural. And, you know, from our perspective, it's using data points to tell the story and methodologies that many ranchers have been using for over 100 years. I think that's in a nutshell. Is that kind of a rambling response, or is that help?
No, you got it. As far as just the advantages, you know, helping you to capture that life cycle of that animal prior to slaughter and communicate that to the end consumer. Is that?
Yeah. And using real data points, you know, the calf was born here. Here's the geolocation. Here's the parentage. Here is the vaccines that were utilized. Here's when it was transported. Here's how long it's been on pasture. You know, those kind of things that our cow calf guys have been doing forever, but again, it gets lost. And so, that's really the idea, is how do we get to sort of more real price discovery, and also possibly disintermediating some folks out of the supply chain, some of the commission takers that maybe don't belong. So in some cases, we'd like to think that the value-added programs will bring a higher premium, but even if they don't bring that higher premium, are there some percentage points that we've cut out of the supply chain that can go back to the producer? So he's effectively keeping more of the pie without necessarily maybe getting a higher price, because that's, you know, there's a lot of factors still that base into that are out of their control. But the closer we can bring the producer to the consumer and shorten that supply chain, we think that's better off for everybody involved.
Sure. Yeah, there's been a lot of talk recently about the fact that 88% of every food dollar spent is spent on, basically, they're paying people to market the food to them, and that the producer of that food product ends up with about $12 of that in his pocket. And so if you guys can help people capture more of that, that's a really good thing. I'd like to turn now to kind of the infrastructure question of this, and what are some of the mechanisms that you're using to capture and track that data, as far as how are you capturing and tracking the individual and the data that is relevant to that individual? How are you capturing and tracking the data of the different ways that that animal has been interacted with, whether it is hauling or vaccines or some of those things you mentioned? What are some of the mechanisms that you're using to capture and track data in this system?
Sure. And it really starts off right now with the RFID tag. And we're using the 840 tags that are USDA approved, that also contain the premise ID of the ranch involved. And we scan them in. We're currently using TrueTest scanners, but you could use an AllFlex scanner or any of the other companies that are creating this technology. And so it starts with the scanner and the tag. And at that point, we're putting in, you know, geolocation is automatically recorded. That we're going to put in a birth date or a range of dates from the first calf to the last calf that the animal was born in. We can batch enter the vaccinations on, you know, like I could put in the individual vaccination, but if I'm doing it for 300 head or 500 head, I can batch that in. create a batch record of that. And, you know, that's really where it starts. You're also probably going to record what programs you want to enter the animal into. Is it going to be an NHTC or an all-natural or an agent source program? You're going to put that in there as well at that time. And then just, you know, record. And we're doing it in very basic terms at this point. So, you know, if there's an animal injured, you would scan the tag again and you would put in, record that as an event. And what treatment was given to the animal, that treatment given to the animal might remove them from an all-natural program or something of that nature. But we want to be sure to capture that. And, you know, one of the things here, too, is to try and digitize the record keeping for the producers and keep them, you know, more of an automated type system. And so today it's the RFID tag. It does require manual scanning. Of course, there are a ton of other scanners that a lot of feedlots, some ranches have at a scale or at a water tank or a panel reader on you know something. So we can utilize all those tools as well. I mean, if it really got down to it, you could even manually enter the RFID numbers and we could still hash those into the system. But really what we're doing is trying to create a platform for the producers to verify the existence of the animals, the attributes around the animals, and then manage them through this tagging system.
So there's kind of a two-part deal to it. There's the data management and then also the communication to the end consumer. Is that kind of accurate to what you guys are trying to do?
Yeah, definitely 100%. Because like I say, we want to, you know, what we want to do is connect the producer in a closer relationship with the consumer. And we also want to allow the small and mid-sized producers access to this information that's out there. And, you know, maybe that's carcass data coming back to them and seeing and recording carcass data over time. You know, the vaccine companies are interested in data around vaccinations. So maybe there's a way if that information is digitized and sold forward to them, that the producers would share in the benefit of that sale. The producers being the owners of their data, but choosing to share certain parts of it across the supply chain and be more transparent and really open up new marketplaces. That's the goal here, or prepare the cattle to be sold in any direction in the marketplace.
So this is beef chain, and that is a hat tip to the blockchain. Can you explain blockchain, just how it works and why it is the best tool for this kind of a system?
Yeah, sure. We like blockchain for its immutability, for the characteristic of being an immutable digital ledger. There are other digital ledgers coming forward that are not necessarily or technically called blockchain, but we support blockchain and the digital ledger technology that's coming out, because what that does is enable us to create an immutable tracking of the records and any changes to the records. There are some aspects of blockchain that are still slow and not necessarily scalable. So we use the part of the blockchain that is best is the immutability and the record keeping. But we also use traditional database infrastructure for queries and searches and some of the things where you need a higher speed. I think one of the things as far as the beef chain model goes is that we want to make sure the producers own their own data, they're in control of their own data, and that we have interoperability amongst all the blockchains. So you're not, you know, tied to just IBM or Ethereum or one of these other blockchains. If one of those goes down, we could, within a short period of other time, be recording this on another chain and keeping those records. So again, what we want to, you know, bring to the cow-calf guy or any of the folks in the beef supply chain is interoperability and flexibility and also the ability to own your own data. But In a nutshell, what we're doing is creating an immutable ledger of this information, and that's the real value here.
And the reason that it is immutable is because it is decentralized. Is that right?
I think so. I that's part of it. There's the decentralization of it, but it's also cryptography. And so you're using encryption to validate the transactions and create unique identifying numbers, i.e. a hash or a unique identifier. And I like to also throw in digital identity into the mix also, is we're creating unique digital identity around transactions. And so therefore, if there's a change in the transaction, it's recorded in the log. So, you know, you could go in and say, actually, this calf was born on May 6th, not May 5th. I could change that, but it's going to show up. It's not just going to be me deleting a field in an Excel spreadsheet. It's going to show up in the log as a change in the data, and that it was originally recorded as this, and then it was indeed changed. So that's what we like about it, because it's a way to verify and validate claims, certifications, and other type of information.
Can you walk me through a designed use case or when this was originally thought up and started to be designed? What was your use case that you had in mind? What was the kind of, in an ideal world, this is how someone would implement BeefChain on their operation?
Yeah, sure. I mean, our original use case is, and we talk about it here in Wyoming again, is how do we differentiate our product from other products? How do we keep that identity with that animal as it travels through the supply chain? And I think that's out there now. We have the ability to do that, but what we want to do at BeefChain is work with the producers to make it a system that works for them, not just a mandate down or a top-down type square peg round hole situation, but bringing the ranchers into the system and understanding, what is your business flow? What is your process flow? What data points are important to you? And what story do you want to tell? And that's really what we've sort of evolved or revolved our project around, is input from the producers, from the ranchers, and talking to them and making sure that this isn't just another add-on cost to them or another, hired hand that they have to use for nothing. You know, that there's real value here. And so, you know, our perspective is just the input that can be given from the producers is invaluable to us. And then we take our finance guys and our computer developers and try to solve around those problems. Oftentimes in the ag industry, everybody sits around talking to each other about their problems. You know, a bunch of cow-calf guys sit around in a circle and say, hey, these are our problems. What we want to do is bring in other people into that conversation, computer coders and developers and finance people and business flow people, and start to see how we can solve around some of these supply chain issues. And as this progresses, I think that this technology lends itself to retained ownership. And we start talking about co-ops, and I was on this morning with a pork co-op that owns their own facility. And really, they're ideally suited for this. And some of the times when I think about blockchain and how this plays out, it almost becomes a de facto co-op. And at some level in there, I do think there are opportunities for retained ownership and for the guys to participate more in these kind of sourced programs and slotting cattle and things of that nature. So I think it does open that up, because now you're in charge. You know, with the information flow, it hopefully brings the producers a closer connection, not just to the consumer, but to the wholesale buyer. So now I might work in a situation where I'm working with a feedlot where the animals can trace through the feedlot, and I may be incentivized to own the animals further in the feedlot. Even the processor could potentially become just pass-through. And, you know, at some level, I would love to see processors and feedlots. I know they have to make a living, so I'm not saying that, but I would love to see those become more sort of pass-through operations and entities where the producers can see that end dollar a little more better or closely. And that's what we're working towards. And like I say, technology eventually creates the de facto co-op model. And without even being a co-op, you end up being one where you're sharing and buying and selling and trading and sourced product lines. And it also could lend itself to potentially future contracts or forward contracts. You know, I want these calves and deliver them to me at this weight on this date and things of that nature. I think that this system could lend itself to quite nicely.
What is the scope of the project currently? How far are you guys into this journey? What's that look like right now?
Yeah, sure. As we sit here in the springtime, we're onboarding new calves, and we want to do that with as many producers as possible. Prior, we were sort of doing it manually to the blockchain, but now we have a system that automates that process and a browser where the producer can log on and manage his herd from there. So we're ready to bring as many new animals and operations into that process as humanly possible. At the same time, we're also out doing trials. We just finished a trial with some lambs up in Canada with the Canadian Sheep Federation. We've done two shipments of beef from Wyoming to Taiwan that we've traced through. And, we're open to any of those kind of opportunities, as this is a collaborative technology. And each and every time we do a model or a use case, we get better. And so we want, again, and I say this, we want producers to be involved so we can get their input. We want them to have a say in what we're doing. And we think that at the current time, it's a very low barrier of input for somebody that would want to join, that's buying the tags. If they wanted to participate in an audited PVP program through our USDA program, that's a little bit of a different cost because there are some costs associated with that. But that's one of the things we're looking to do too, is how do we audit, or how do we create a more simplified audit process for the USDA? How do we digitize these documents and validate them so an auditor might be able to sit at his desk and know in real time what's going on in a ranch instead of having to make these visits and costs and things of that nature? That doesn't necessarily mean you don't need to put eyes on operations, because there's still that human level of trust that goes into this as well. But we think that there's ways of communicating information that will reduce costs and increase food trust, food safety, and things of that nature. So we're out all hands on deck doing everything as we can right now. But again, our core focus is the cow-calf guy and getting him on board and learning from them and create a system that works for them. Prior to a mandatory tagging system being implemented by the government, or, you know, we may be one big disease breakout away from that. And we want to have a tool in place that is regulatory compliant, but also helps and benefits the producers rather than just being a burden to them.
Can you talk a little bit about that group of cattle that were produced and sent to Taiwan?
Sure. Those came off of a ranch in Wyoming, the Murray Mir Ranch. They've been in operation for about 100 years. I think they're on fourth generation or so. And they're all natural. We did not track them from birth. We picked them up in the pasture, as that was a unique situation because it was the opportunity to do it and they needed some fat cattle. And so that required fat cattle at that time. But we are now still working with the Murray Mir Ranch on tagging in their calves and creating a more complete tracking system for them. They anticipate sending shipments to Taiwan at least once a month and hopefully more as they grow. So we want to be a part of that process for them. And the cattle were, those animals were processed in Pierce, Colorado at Double J Processing. And they were walked through. And then we also worked with Avery Dennison, the company that produces labels, on some unique RFID labels that were sent over with the packaged beef. And then the packaged beef arrived in Taiwan at Keeper Foods and then was transported from there to the Sherwood Hotel, where it was served. And each consumer, when they ate the beef, when they ordered the steak, they got a little hand card with a picture of the ranch and an explanation about the ranch in Mandarin Chinese, and then a QR code that they could scan with their phone, and then the QR code took them back to a story about the ranch, and they could also see the data points of when the animal was processed and all of that type of stuff. So that was a basic, you know, rudimentary tracking of beef overseas, and it was a success. So we hope to carry that on and grow and learn and build upon it every time we send a new shipment.
Very cool.
It was fun. I mean, it was parallel tracking, right? So you still had all the regulatory paperwork that the government requires that, you know, we hope to be able to digitize and improve upon. But then we did a parallel tracking with labels and all that, that our labels met GS1 standards and everything for export. So we hope that our system will someday replace that or improve upon what is really paperwork heavy work. And, you know, if we could, you know, again, simplify this track and trace for the cow calf guys, then there's a lot more opportunities to sell containers of beef overseas and into different marketplaces through cooperatives or just small groups of producers. And it's out there. But we have to, you know, you can't expect that the rancher is going to be out producing good product and at the same time worrying about 1,000 other things in the supply chain. So, you know, we want to build in systems that would automatically allow them to participate in this kind of trade just by picking up the phone or tagging your cattle in and saying, hey, this is what we're doing. And so, yeah, it was a success. And I talk a little bit about, I don't mention earlier, but we did the lamb demo in Canada, and that was vertically integrated. It wasn't an export market, but it went from the producer to a store, Sobeys in Canada. And I think we really improved upon what we did with the beef in that we were able to create better fields of documentation, tell the data story a little better. And then when they went back and looked at the data, you could see when it was in the cooler, when it was moved from the cooler, when it was packaged and all that kind of stuff. And this is important because the consumers want to know their product is fresh. And through that process, we were able to, you know, really tell them that it was fresh indeed. And so, you know, when we do one for the sheep, it helps the cattle guys. When we do one with the cattle guys, it helps the sheep guys. And so forth. And, you know, we just want to help all the producers along the way as this progresses.
Can you talk about the bottom line on that deal at all, on the Taiwan deal at all? What kind of a difference that data made in the end check that came back to the consumer? Or is that not, I mean, we don't have to talk numbers, but percentages or something? Is that?
Yeah, I think that on that one, it's a little tougher because I don't know exactly. I mean, you'd have to talk to the producer. I think she's making a little bit, but it might even be a break even or a labor of love at this point. One of the difficulties there is currently there's one hotel that's taking a limited quantity of beef. You need a minimum quantity of beef to, you know, we're paying to ship pounds that we're not paying, right? So, you know, once you get into the volume and those economies of scale make those things bigger. But part of it now is, you know, let's send one shipment, let's try it, let's do it. And if nobody dies and you don't go broke, then okay, let's do it again, you know? And so that's kind of where we're at. So I do think she's moving into profitability on it. That's, you know, Murray Muir Farms information and all of that. But what we want to do is again, continue to help her reduce those costs, reduce the shipping costs, and then also help her source cattle to keep the program growing. Obviously, she doesn't have enough cattle on her own farm to do something like that in a monthly scale. It's also tough for the cow-calf guys to have cattle year-round. It's tough to get a consistency of product. And so there's a lot of factors that go into making these things successful. And there's a lot of guys out there, dead bones on the road to doing these type of things. But again, as a collaboration, it's been a success. And, you know, it's something that we're just going to keep pushing that rock up the hill. And if we can help the producers build out these kind of programs, whether they be feeders or individual producers or co-ops, you know, we're all in. And a lot of this is, again, how do we move from making the small guys that their job is to produce beef, how do we help them along the rest of the supply chain to monetize that, you know, as far as they can.
Absolutely. How private is the data? I mean, does Beef Chain have access to my data if I'm a participant in their using their platform? How private is that data? What does that look like?
Sure. All of the producers own their own data in our platform. That's a terms of use agreement that we go into. And we would, of course, I mean, have access to the data because it's being recorded by us. But that's not information that we would be allowed to monetize or anything like that. But at this point, you know, you're going to want to include data that's, you know, pretty much going to be open to everybody. I mean, it's big data points like, you know, what's the location of your farm? Is it a heifer or a steer? What's it been vaccinated with? I think those are pretty simple data points. But again, as they're shared forward, that's up to the producer. And as we reach into this scale of interoperability, some of that data was going to be required by the next guy in the supply chain and the next guy. So that's what we call permissioned data. And so there's a lot of data that can be collected, including genetics and everything else, and recorded into a blockchain. But you're not all of that is going to be pertinent to everybody. So you can permission who receives which data and how it's ported through the supply chain. But yeah, that's, you know, and a lot of like carcass data would be a relationship between either the feeder or the processor back to the producers or whatever. Some of this is still playing out. You know, I mean, this is a new technology, and there's a lot of this stuff that's still playing out. But from our perspective, we just want to prove out the technology. And for now, the data belongs to the ranchers. If there are ways to monetize that data, like vaccine information or whatever, we believe that should be like a data commons type model, where if a producer puts his information forward, then he receives the benefit of it being monetized. And again, some of that still needs to be worked out, how that's done and exactly how. That's probably a few years down the road, but that's where we're coming from. So we're not out to sell your data or make it, you know, available to people who shouldn't have it. Let's put it that way.
So as I was reading the article in Forbes about Beef Chain, a couple of things came to mind. And one of them was that there seems to be a misunderstanding about the percentage of cattle in the United States that spend the majority of their life on grass. And so I was wanting to give you an opportunity to talk about the avenues of education that this kind of understanding of data opens up to the producer. Not necessarily that you guys are doing the educating, but that you have the opportunity to educate the end consumer with this data.
Yeah, I think that's important. That's one of the original sort of ideas that we've built around. Is what do these claims actually mean? What does grass-fed mean? What does organic mean? What does all-natural mean? Pasture-raised. You hear all these different claims, and many of them are either false claims or nebulous claims, and it really affects the bottom line for the guys who are actually doing it right. I also think when it comes to grass-fed that, you know, people don't understand, like, all of a sudden, grain-fed has become this kind of bad word. But the truth of it is most people like grain-fed beef or finished, you know, grain, corn or whatever it is. That's, you know, that's what people enjoy, particularly in the export market. So one of the things that I think we need to do, too, is educate people that one isn't necessarily better than the other, that it's a matter of personal taste, but that all of these protocols that, that producers follow are humane and ethical, whether they be corn-fed or whether they be grass-fed or they eat peanuts and beer or whatever it is. You know, we're not there to say one's better than the other because people have different tastes. What we are there to do is record the data and inform people what that actually means when they're buying that product, you know. And there's a lot of gaming of the system on organic, on grass-fed, and these kind of things. And so we want to reward the producers who are doing grass-fed right by sharing their data and their information. But we also want to educate consumers on just what do all these different claims mean. And I think when people say hear corn-fed too, there's a lot of misconception about what that is. And there's a lot of misconception about GMOs and hormones and all of these different things. Maybe the vast amount don't want to know or they don't care. But there is a core percentage of people who, one, do want to know, and we want to keep educating them. And two, you also want to fight disinformation. And there's a lot of disinformation. You know, you see the Green New Deal and the cow farts and all this kind of stuff. And we need to battle that disinformation that's out there about the livestock industry in the United States. And they also, I noticed lately they've been using this term a lot called factory farming. And that's that's meant to, as a pejorative, it's meant to tell everybody that this is a bad thing. Because if you call it family farming, which is what it is, it's family farming. If you call it family farming, then that doesn't have the same negative connotation as factory farming. Well, we don't grow cows in factories, right? We grow them in pastures and pens and places of this nature. Granted, there are parts of the industry that should be criticized. But what we want to do here is bring transparency to the industry and help bring some of those sort of older stale techniques out into the open and do away with them and make other, you know, make look, our ranchers that have been producing for 100 years, you can't call these guys factory farmers. You know, these are the original conservationists. They're the people that are taking care of the land. They're keeping the land open. And you know, that story has to be told. And so I think it's important for us to get away from these factory farming concepts or terminologies and really tell the story for what it is it's the family farmer. Those are the guys with 20 head, 30 head, 100 head. Those are the ones that are feeding America and feeding the world. And that's an important story to tell.
Very cool. Yeah, real exciting stuff. So what's the future look like, just as we point towards wrapping up? What's the future look like for Beef Chain, and what are you guys thinking about and maybe new ways that you're iterating on the original design and some of those things?
Sure. I mean, the original, you know, concept and the baseline of what we're doing is traceability, track and trace. But when you get into sort of creating digital representations of animals, you're now creating digital assets. And that opens up the ability to potentially create digital marketplaces where you have more real-time data on buying and selling of animals. Maybe we have more real-time data of animals on feed at any given time in the United States, or even the cattle census. Maybe we can get to more real-time data, because a lot of, as you well know, what's going on in the industry is guesswork on trades and basis points and all these other things that, quite frankly, go above my pay grade. But there's a lot of paperwork that's done in there. There's a lot of withholding of information. There's a lot of misinformation. And so the more we can get to utilizing precision agriculture to realize real-time market conditions, I think that we're going to get a not necessarily better price discovery. That's a term somebody told me not to use, but real price discovery. And that's really what we're driving towards, is real price discovery and the ability for small, medium-sized producers to have a better foothold in the marketplace and be a influencer in how the market is driven, not be a byproduct of the marketplace and just a price taker. And so often they are just price takers. And we hope to help change this conversation. At the same time, we're looking towards ways of improving regulatory compliance, ways to make more efficient reporting data and things of that nature. And the other thing I want to talk about just briefly before we go is the COOL program, the country of origin labeling. That, you know, when I get producers, sometimes they're like, oh, you know, blockchain or, you know, this, that, or the other. If I start talking and framing it around COOL, then I get a better reception because the guys, most of the cow-calf guys, and I think a lot of producers in the United States supported the COOL program, and they believe in country of origin labeling. Well, when you're validating where the animal was from and attaching digital identity to it and verifications, that is country of origin label. That's it on steroids. I'm giving you the exact geolocation that this animal came from. So, you know, it gets real hard. And once we start getting into tagging a lot of animals and things of this nature, your country of origin labeling becomes automatic. This is country of origin labeling. And I think we need to encourage the big processors to help us carry that through and do product lines that are based on verified American producers. And so, you know, we're out there supporting COOL, but in this instance, this is an organic grassroots up, bottom up COOL methodology. And so, you know, that's what we want to see happen also. And again, you know, beefchain.com is the website. Rob@beefchain.com is my email address. So I welcome conversation from producers anywhere. We're talking to producers in Canada, in Russia, in Ireland, Africa, South America, across the United States. And there's a move towards the individual guys wanting to have a bigger stake in the game and a bigger say on what's going on. And we see that everywhere we go. And, you know, that's exciting to us. That's good stuff.
So, yeah, I want to get into that onboarding process, but I just wanted to say that I'm a fan of the free market solving these problems of country of origin labeling. And that's what you guys are proof of, that the free market has demanded this ability to say, this is the story of this piece of meat, to call it for what it is. And you guys have risen up and filled that niche in the market. And I'm excited about the opportunities that it's going to present in the future. I just think that decentralized approaches are always better, more efficient than centralized ones. And you guys are a decentralized approach that is a competitor in a market that is going to hopefully add value to the producer as well as the end consumer when they eat beef that they feel better about eating for whatever reason. So yeah, good stuff. I'm really excited about that. Can you just walk us through the process of onboarding into this? You know, you've shared the website and people can go there and get in touch with you, but could you just lay out a process? Is it just as simple as buying tags and a reader? Is there a cost associated with accessing the platform? What are some of those things?
Yeah, sure. It is a very simple process. It is as simple as buying the 840 EID tags. We happen to like Ytex. They're a good company, but there's a lot of different. AllFlex is also a good one, and there's a lot of them out there. We use TrueTest scanners, but there's a number of those different scanners out there as well. We're also experimenting with NFC tags that can be read from a mobile phone. But we do have an app that will be out in a couple of weeks that will enable you to work through your smartphone on this technology with a reader. And it's really simple. Now, at this point, we are onboarding cattle. And I would offer this to your listeners is that really all we would ask at this point is that you buy the tags and put your cattle into the system and then give us input and help us to build it out for something that works for you. That's where we're at now. We do have our own PVP that is same as an IMI or a Samson or any of these others. So if somebody wants to do an all natural program or a NHTC or something like that, there would be some additional costs involved in that because there are some audit costs and things associated with the PVP. But minimally, we can do an agent source verification, which qualifies them for export markets, and then start tracking the data and create a login record for the rancher to see that those animals. And that's really where it begins. And you know, the more folks we get to participate, the stronger we can build this out. And the thing you talked about, decentralized systems, and that's what I like here, is because ranchers are a decentralized network. And the ethos and the model of blockchain fits so perfectly for ranching, because what happens is when you connect the network together, you get network effect. And that's how the producers get power, is by network effect. And it's sort of like the unionization of the workers, right? Now, we're not a union. We're not unionizing anybody. But we certainly are creating network effect, and we're hoping to create a broader producer-based model that says, hey, we're here. You have to recognize us, and this is our cattle. And we're also now available to more buyers, not less buyers. So we want to increase the amount of people that have access to buying these cattle. And that's through a digital marketplace and the digitization of the asset. And one of the things I think also that is feasible here is better ability for audits from banks. If you want to use your cattle as collateral, now you can offer a digital verification of the cattle, and they can audit them in real time. So there's a big benefit there, and just all sorts of different unique kind of things that we maybe even haven't realized yet. That starts by just entering the cattle into the data stream. And I know there's some ranchers that are averse to this. But look, if you're selling cattle, you do have minimal regulatory requirements you have to meet anyway. That's there. And if you want to participate in these larger markets and sort of be a part of the 21st century supply chain, then there's just, you know, new ways that we're going to have to record our information, and that we're going to have to carry it through. So what we aim to do is create a platform that puts the ranchers in charge of that. And I would also add, too, that we're an API, which means that that's an integrated program that if you're using another app, whether it's PowerCalf or HerdWatch or AgBoost or any of them that are out there, that information can be gathered through that app and still brought over to our blockchain and verified on a blockchain. So if you have a system or a process that you're already using and works for you, then we can also let that sit on top of us. We're not trying to reinvent every wheel. We're not trying to be the center of the universe. But we want to do an aggregator of the conversation, and maybe help build that superhighway where you take disparate data collection and bring it into one stream where it has more value. And, you know, that's really the goal. So, you know, we just keep plugging, man. I'm pushing the rock up the hill every day. And, you know, being on podcasts like this is awesome. This is how we get the word out. This is, tell your neighbor about us, talk to us. If somebody wants to do a webinar and get a bunch of producers together and sit down and talk with our team, we're happy to do that. You know, we're an open book. And so we want to be a collaboration amongst the guys that we're working hard for. And that's our producers, or the American rancher. And let me say this too. I want to say something else here too. A shout out to the women in ranching, because women in ranching are the unsung heroes. And as I talk to ranchers and producers, so often it's the wife that's doing the paperwork. It's the wife that's running the operation, that's telling the producer not to spend so much money or whatever it is. And so we want to work with those people too. And, you know, we love everybody. This is a family deal. And we want to keep your kids involved in ranching. We just want to be able to make ranching profitable, so we can continue on this heritage in our country.
Rob, I can see the passion for this project. It's really cool. Really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me today. I do want to be real clear, though. about what you just said, that there is no upfront cost associated with it outside of the infrastructure, the equipment, the tags, the reader. Is that correct?
That's what we're offering today, yes. Unless you want to participate in a USDA PVP program, there are some certifications involved that require audit costs and things of that nature. But yeah, we're open. We would like to onboard that. That's not going to include everybody, right? I can't do that for 50,000 cattle or something. But if somebody's interested in participating now with us, we would love to have you participate.
So how about this? Let's just go ahead and set up that webinar. This will be a first in the history of the Working Cows podcast, but let's look at setting up a webinar sometime later on. I'm going to leave that pretty indefinite at this point so we can work out some schedules. But I'll gather some people that would be interested in learning more, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to have some people that are interested in learning more. And we will announce that in the show notes page, which is workingcows.net/82. workingcows.net/82 is the show notes page for today. We'll have a link to that webinar and the schedule so that people can sign up to join it. And we will schedule a time to sit down and let you share directly to those producers who might be interested in joining up with this. Because I think this was a conversation we had today on Twitter about the what happened to the hog industry, basically. And that beef is headed down that same road. If something like this, something like Beef Chain, doesn't come along to give them the ability to communicate directly to their end consumer. And so I think it's an important piece, and I think it's something that we need to expose to more people, and hopefully to people who are making decisions about onboarding this in their operation. So if you're down with for that, we will schedule that webinar now, and we will get that word out as this episode comes out.
Hey, that would be fantastic. Let me tell you, there's two things I could talk for hours about. That's blockchain and cows. So it's a great topic. I love talking about it. I learn more about it every time I talk to somebody. And yeah, so 100%, we're open to doing that anytime. Really appreciate you doing that.
Yep. Any other links you want me to throw up? I'm going to throw a link to, obviously, beefchain.io and specifically the press side of that website, where you have links to all the articles that have featured Beef Chain. So there'll be links there at workingcows.net/82. Any other links you want me to throw up that would be helpful?
Well, if anybody's interested in the traceability conversation, I would also encourage them to look at animalagriculture.org. That's the National Institute of Animal Agriculture. We are a sponsor of the Traceability Conference in Des Moines, Iowa, April 8th through April 11th. Again, animalagriculture.org, National Institute of Animal Agriculture. And they're leading the way in kind of being a aggregator of this conversation. They've been great to Beef Chain and have supported us since the beginning. We're just a little bunch of little tiny guys and some kids from Wyoming trying to figure it out. So we appreciate their support. And if you do, Beef Chain will be there with Deloitte, is one of our partners. We'll be at the Animal Agriculture Traceability Conference in Des Moines, Iowa, April 8th through the 11th. And we would love to see some folks there. I do believe there's a registration fee involved in that. But you can go to their website and check them out. And we're proud to be a sponsor of that event.
So yeah, this episode will release April 1st. So you got a week to get your stuff in place and be there. But as I said, we'll have that webinar coming up in the near future. And the link to that webinar calendar event will be at the show notes page, workingcows.net/82. So hopefully we can, if you can't make it to the traceability event, you can jump on the webinar and get some of those questions answered. So Rob, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, great. Hey, thanks a lot. Looking forward to this.
Good stuff there with Rob. And as I said, workingcows.net/82. Show notes page for today is workingcows.net/82. If you want to go there and sign up for the webinar that we've got coming up on Tuesday, April 16th at 8 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time, there will be a link to the event in that Google Calendar invite, but you can just RSVP to the event for now and then have it on your calendar and be
be reminded of it as we get closer, and I will remind you of it on every episode between now and April 16th, which, as I said at the beginning of the show, might be more than you're used to, but I guess I hope more content is better, and maybe this calving season you're going to have more time to be listening to this, so take advantage of that while you've got the time, and jump in and grab these time-sensitive episodes before the events that we're talking about come up. So thank you for your time today. Look forward to more episodes with you. We've got great episodes coming up with Kelly Sidorek on, she's a holistic management educator, and we're going to talk to her about kind of a holistic view of the succession planning issue. We're going to talk to John Locke from the Locke division of the J.D. Hudgens Brahman seed stock producer outfit down there in Texas. We're going to talk to him about their own succession events and how that has shaped the management there at the Locke division of the J.D. Hudgens Brahman seed stock producer. So really good stuff, and I can't wait to share these episodes with you. That's why I'm going to rush them out, and partly also because I'll just say it here. The Locks or J.D. Hudgens is having their bull sale coming up in April, and I wanted to get the episode that I did with John out before their bull sale so that you would have a chance to be made aware of it and hear about the benefits that maybe the Boss Indicus could offer to you as a producer of not necessarily Boss Indicus cattle. So that's enough. I've talked enough today, both before and after the episode, but just one more reminder, workingcows.net/82 is a show notes page for today. RSVP to the Google Calendar event for the Zoom webinar that will be coming up on Tuesday, April 16th at 8 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time. Have a good day. We'll see you soon with another episode.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.